Hello, Niners, and welcome to the Research in Software Engineering Group. I'm here with Ben and Ben. So, Ben, can you talk
Hi.
about you a little bit?
So I'm Ben Zorn. I work on programming language runtime systems, specifically memory allocation, memory management issues, and I'm here to talk today about Nozzle with Ben Lifshitz.
I'm Ben Lifshitz. I work on issues related to security and programming languages.
Excellent. So, Ben, you're already kind of a star on Channel 9. We already have a video about you. We talked about memory, and I guess we are going to talk about these kind of things today. So, what's cooking?
Well, so we have this project that focuses on protecting web browsers from security attacks. So the focus of the name of the project is Nozzle, and the focus it is on protecting against what's known as heap spraying. So it probably would be helpful if we explain what heap spraying means first.
And I'm sure everybody's really eager to understand that. So let's get started.
So we'll go to the whiteboard and sort of show what's going on.
So just to understand heap spraying,
So let's roll back.
okay.
What's a heap? And
Okay, great point. When you run your program, browser, whatever, you've got some code. And I'll say good code. And also you've got some data. So the data typically is stored in part of the memory called the heap. Okay? And there's lots of good data here. Which involves all your objects that your browser needs to show a web page. But when an attacker comes along, they want to do two things. They want to first
So you're a good Ben, and
yeah,
then
the good Ben. Not to be the bad
All right.
Come on, bad
So,
Ben.
yeah, you want to talk about it?
About what? Bad code?
Talk about the attacker and what the attacker tries to do.
Sure. So the idea behind a lot of these attacks is that you would try to put some sort of malicious code into the heap portion of the memory, right? So there'll be this object shown in red. And this is typically where exploit code would go. So if you can figure out a way to jump to this portion of the heap, that will create an exploit.
So that has been done for years. That's
Well,
the
that's kind of
essence
the
of
principle,
yes.
right? This is a very schematic way to describe what's going on. Now, the challenge is really how do you make it so that there's bad code in the heap, and then how do you figure out a way to jump it? So those are the next two challenges.
So one thing that's happened over the years is that people designing security have thought, well, we're going to make it harder to know where the bad code is by randomizing where things are in the heap. So Vista has protection like this called address-based randomization. And so in any given run, the bad code might be here, it might be here, it might be here. And if the attacker is always jumping to the same place, then many times in a Vista system, they'll fail because the code gets moved around all the time. So the attackers have realized this, and they've come up with a strategy for avoiding this problem, which is called heap spraying. And instead of having one copy of their bad code, now they'll make many, many copies. And literally tens of thousands of copies of this bad code.
Now, the interesting thing is that in the context of a web browser, creating a structure that looks like this is actually fairly easy. So if you think about a web browser like Internet Explorer, Firefox, and what happens when it opens a page, well, so somewhere in the browser process, somewhere in memory, it needs to represent data structures that the page creates. So the DOM, the text, the HTML of the page is represented somehow. In addition to that, there is also stuff that's created by JavaScript that exists on the page. Now, in JavaScript, you have an excellent opportunity to really do pretty much anything. In particular, you can allocate objects that would look kind of like this. You can essentially create a structure, a network of these objects throughout the heap, all of which are malicious. And create a heap spraying opportunity. Now, from the standpoint of the language, right, JavaScript is still a memory safe language, and all that's happening you know, in the process of a heap sprang exploit is that this page might be allocating a bunch of strings or array objects on the
heap. That's all fine.
That's all entirely fine, and there's really no way to tell whether a particular string object, generally speaking, is entirely fair game or is part of this attack in progress. So JavaScript makes actually for a very easy tool to create a structure such as this.
So we haven't finished the story. So we've created all those copies. Now, how do we get to jump to them?
Right. So in this case, the attacker still has to exploit a bug in the browser code. So there has to be some error in the coding of the core type safe code of the application, memory safe code of the application. So typically, the browser itself is written in C or C++, and there's a buffer overflow, there's a dangling pointer error, some kind of error that the attacker can exploit that causes the code to accidentally jump into an arbitrary
somewhere.
Address. That's right. And in fact, all the kind of security patches you see on browsers like this are actually filling those holes, but then the attackers find new ones, and it's sort of a never-ending cycle.
So again, there are essentially two steps here, right? The first one is exploit the bug and create a jump. And then the second one is when you jump to something, you really need to have something to jump to, and you need to have some reasonable, interesting exploit code to do something. Otherwise, most likely what you're going to see is just a program crash. It's not really going to be very beneficial for the attacker to do that.
Mm-hmm. Right? Sounds familiar.
Yeah, I like to think of this as, this is a shack, the attacker is filling the shack with tons of dynamite, okay? And this the bug that they exploit is the spark that sets off the explosion.
I see.
So, I think that's a pretty reasonable analogy.
So, we got heap spray, and I guess, so what did you do about it, or...
So what we have, as I mentioned earlier, is Nuzzle, which is a runtime detection technique. So what it means is that we instrument the browser, or it could be really any other application that expects input from an untrusted user. We instrument the browser, and we pay attention to how memory allocation is done. We keep track of memory allocation calls, and we maintain a notion of what could be loosely called heap health, right? And then we update.
Heap
health.
Which means,
well, we'll explain exactly what it means,
okay.
But this is just kind of an analogy, right? So basically, normal execution should,
I think of it as, our goal with Nozzle, as I said, the heap has lots of good data. Our goal with Nozzle is to distinguish the bad data from the good data. Essentially, looking at each object and saying, "Wow, does that object look very suspicious, or does that look like just your average, everyday, normal, real, good object?" And the health of the heap is really a measure of the ratio of bad stuff, things that look kind of suspicious, to things that look fairly normal. That's what we maintain as the program executes with Nozzle.
Right, and that's basically what allows us to distinguish exploits from benign web pages, for instance.
Excellent.
So it turns out to be actually fairly tricky to design this metric, this health metric, that is robust. So if you were to naively look at, objects in the heap and say, well, could this be executable code? Turns out that most things are actually something that you can parse as executable code. So now experiments in the order of, 80 to 85% of all objects on the heap could conceivably be parsed as valid CPU instructions. So if that's your criterion, then, you're going to produce tons and tons of false positives. So that's not really a very good approach. We really need to pay attention to what's going on within these individual objects. So... let me try to kind of outline the principle behind detection.
Yes.
So what happens is, so consider one of these objects over here. Let's kind of, let's move it.
Can you use maybe another color?
Sure. Is this better?
Yes.
Okay. So suppose this is one of these objects over here. just redo it over here. So what we're going to do is we're going to parse it, essentially. We're going to disassemble this object as you would a stream of instructions and construct a control flow graph out of it. Right? So this object is going to be converted to a control flow graph that might look like this, for instance. So there's going to be a few of these little blocks connected to each other, and there's going to be something at the bottom over here. So maybe there's an edge that goes like this, an edge that goes like that.
So your disassembly, here, you're parsing JavaScript code, or you're actually disassembly?
No, this is whatever we find on the heap, right? So this is just some sort of binary data. It could be coming from JavaScript, it could be coming from HTML, it could be an image, a JPEG image for all we know. We don't really care. All we try to do is we try to disassemble it. And in most cases, like I mentioned earlier, we're actually able to disassemble it pretty successfully. And so once we do that, we construct this control flow graph, right? So each of these basic blocks contains several instructions, usually. This is what it looks like. Right. So now here's a key property that we're after. So if an attacker is to be successful, going back to this picture over here, they need to design pretty much every object so that no matter where within the object you jump to it, you're going to go to shellcode. Why is that? That's because they don't really have precise control over where they're going to end up. So, within this object, could be this place over here, could be towards the end over here, could be, other possibilities. So typically, the way these attacks are designed in practice is that they start with a no-op sled that, occupies the majority of this object over here, and then the rest of it is shellcode.
So you'll see a lot of blocks jumping to the shellcode.
Right. So this is not the only possibility, but this is a very typical picture that we see time and time again. So what's going to happen is that with a high probability, if you're going to jump within this object, you're going to hit a place somewhere within this no-op sled, and then you're just going to follow it all the way to shellcode towards the bottom. Now, going back to this picture, which gives us intuition for an algorithm, what happens is that we are looking for every basic block over here, we compute the number of instructions within this object, so that whenever you jump to one of those instructions, you're going to end up over here. So, for instance, for this basic block, it's really just instructions over here. And so the same is the case for this one over here. But for this one over here, pretty much no matter where you jump within this object, you're going to end up here.
I see.
Right? So, but it turns out that actually this property is not that common. It's not very common to find objects, with this property in the wild.
You mean non-malicious code?
Well, So the thing is that we don't try to...
It's not non-malicious code. Right. It's non-malicious data. Think of it that way. Remember, all the stuff we're looking at is data.
It's data.
It was never code. It was never supposed to be code to begin with, right?
I see.
And so, it both has to look like code, which Ben said happens more frequently than you think. Mm-hmm. But in addition, it also has to have the structure, which, that starts becoming very unlikely, and that's what we observe in practice.
So again, the structure is the following. No matter where you jump within this object, you are going to end up in the same place. And while it's possible to parse the majority of this object somehow, this structure is really quite an exception. We see it in the wild, sort of, on average, in about, 2-5% of all objects. Whereas in the case of an exploit, you will see that, this structure holds for, say, 99% of the objects. So if you were to look at sort of an exploit pattern versus a regular pattern, this is the picture you would see. So I should point out that this is really just the basis for our algorithm. What we do next is that we compute this value for every object that we track on the heap, and then we normalize it with respect to the size of the heap to get a percentage, essentially, which is our proxy for the fraction of malicious objects.
So that's your health
metric? Right. What we call normalized attack surface is this value, right? And so if you were to plot it...
Let me zoom on it.
...over time, you would see a picture that looks kind of like this. So if we use green again. So if you were to, and again, you know, in the context of a web browser, this makes for a particularly sort of compelling example, and you'll see it when we do the demo. But suppose we have a benign page, I don't know, Amazon.com or something like that, right? So this value, the normalized attack surface value, might hover around, 5%, generally under 10% or so. Okay, so this value might vary as the program, you know, as the browser is allocating various data, but generally it's not going to exceed 10 or 15%. Now, in the case, let me use red actually to describe
the bad guy.
So it might start just the same, right? It might start out exactly the same. So the normalized attack surface value will hover around, a few percentage points. And then the moment the spraying starts, right? The moment these objects are starting to be allocated on the heap, we see this immediate jump, you know, that goes up rapidly.
So when you say you see, you actually. You have something to see it.
Yeah. So essentially, we have, like I mentioned earlier, what we have is an online, meaning it happens as the program is running, monitoring technique, right? So we take a browser, we instrument it, and we observe this value as the browser is running.
Cool. And we're going to see that.
And we're going to see that as
excellent.
Part of the demo. But you know, just to finish over here, you know, there's an obvious difference between, say, benign page over here and an exploit that behaves like this, and then this value goes up to, say, I don't know, 95% or so, close to 100%, generally speaking. And this allows us to set up, a threshold for detection quite easily, just because there's such a
nice.
Stark difference between the two.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So whenever you set a threshold around here, you'll be able to tell these two cases apart quite easily. And so when we experiment with these things, we consider, I mean, of course, for something you build into a browser, you know, you really have to worry about false positives and false negatives just because there are, you know, millions of users using the browser. So if you create false positives, you know, people will be upset. If you create false negatives, you run the risk of missing potential vulnerabilities. And so what we experiment on is a set of top 150 Alexa pages. Basically the most popular pages, roughly speaking, on the web, to make sure that none of them produce a false positive, and none of them do. In pretty much all the cases that we see, we see a picture that looks kind of like that. And in addition to that, we also look at published exploits, and we use Metasploit, an exploit generation framework, to generate, you know, still more keep spraying exploits, about 2,000 overall, and for all of them, you know, we see a pattern that kind of resembles this.
I'm getting scared of you, Ben.
Not that bad.
And I just want to say a little bit about the relevance. So this is a very relevant problem. Just recently, there was actually a reported attack on the Adobe PDF reader, and essentially. In PDF, there's a mechanism to turn on JavaScript. So basically, when you look at a PDF web page or a web PDF page, JavaScript can be running. An attacker can embed a JavaScript heap spray, and in fact, that's what people are seeing on the web in mid-February. So this is a real problem. It's not just browsers. It happens in PDF as well. And in fact, as Ben said, any place where there's data. Where you load a lot of data from someplace into your heap, then you have to worry about the possibility of attacks.
Excellent. So it's not just a funny research project.
Well,
it is actually happening right now.
That's right.
In the wild.
It was happening, yes, isn't this last month. And it's not only JavaScript either, right? It could be any sort of data that you're getting from an untrusted source. It could be a Word document, or it could be an image, right? You could, I don't know, have an image of a kitten, right? And you could figure out a creative way to embed, again, exactly. So you could figure out a creative way to embed shellcode into it so that you, I don't know, overrun a buffer somewhere in one of the many JPEG readers that exist out there. And really, that's all that's required. So data becomes, it looks fine, but it becomes dangerous. That's really the
wow.
Here.
Very cool. So I'm really thrilled to see the demo that you have today. So I understand that The tool is called Nuzzle.
Yes.
Is there a web page or?
Yeah, if you just look for, go to your favorite search engine.
Yeah, we'll add the link, but so can you, is there a download or?
We don't have a download. We have a paper that describes it, and we'll probably put a screencast on the web as well so that you can kind of see it more closely.
Excellent. Okay, so let's get into the demo, right?
Sounds good. Okay, sure. So what we're going to show you is a demo of Nuzzle. What we have here is an instrumented version of Firefox. We instrumented an older version of Firefox that has a well-known vulnerability in it. This is Firefox 1.04, I believe, that has a vulnerability that's been subject to several heap spraying exploits and in the past. So we'll show you a demo that demonstrates a real-life heap spraying exploit, and we'll also show you how Nuzzle prevents it. So we are going to start the browser. Again, this version of Firefox has been instrumented with Nuzzle, and we'll describe what you see on the screen in a second when the browser starts.
There goes Firefox.
Okay, so there goes Firefox. So it's slow.
So we see two graphs at the bottom, and I guess.
Right. So on top of the page, we see a regular web page. In this case, it's yahoo.com. We can go to a variety of other highly popular web pages. At the bottom of the page, we see two graphs. So these things are real-time indicators. There are two things we're monitoring and displaying in real time. So the first one at the very bottom of the screen is easy to explain. This is just the size of the allocated heap. And for a regular web page, the size of the allocated heap could be about, 10 megabytes at the most. It doesn't generally get very big. Now, the second indicator is that heap health metric that we talked about earlier. This is the normalized surface area for the for the browser, for this program that we instrumented with Nuzzle. And so that value, again, for a benign page, generally hovers around 5%, can be as high as 7%, sometimes it's 3%, but generally doesn't go above 10% or so. So what we're going to do is we're going to start an exploit, we'll start heap spraying, yeah, and see what happens to these indicators.
Let's spray it.
Let's spray
it. Yeah, we're going to spray the heat. Okay, so if we look at the indicators, see, basically, we see both of them rapidly increasing. So in this case, the memory has increased to almost 500 megabytes, and the heap, the surface area, the attack surface of the heap now has gone up to almost 90%.
But memory wouldn't be enough to detect that there's an attack. It could just be...
Right.
That's right. Your exactly. Website might actually need a lot of memory for whatever it's using. Yeah, that's right.
So doing graphics, could be playing a movie and so on and so forth. So memory alone is not really sufficient indicator.
That's right. And we've separated out the exploit. So now that the heap is ready, we can now attack the heap with a buffer overrun vulnerability.
Right. Of course, in practice, these things would be done one after another.
And you can immediately see that the attacker in this attack would be able to open up a shell window here. We've indicated in red to show this dangerous. And of course, at that point, they can't do anything.
So that's a nice attack. In reality, it would be more
right.
Silent
right.
And deadly.
Yeah, exactly. You wouldn't necessarily know what was happening. And of course, all kinds of things could be changed on your machine.
Right. And just to recap the nature of this attack, this is basically a drive-by attack, which means that if you have a browser that is vulnerable somehow, you can be lured to a page that has this heap spraying vulnerability that's being exploited in it, and by just virtue of visiting a page, a web page, you can have an attack running on your machine.
Actually, having that lower indicator that showed you the size of the heap, that might actually be useful to some people using a browser. It might be a good plugin to have just in general, because even though it doesn't necessarily guarantee that it's a heap spray, somebody might want to know that the fact that some JavaScript they're running on some web page is allocating a lot of memory.
Right.
So okay. Now we have Nuzzle and we can detect those.
Right. So now we enable Nuzzle and we'll show you the same demo, at least the beginning of the same demo, and see how Nuzzle prevents the exploit.
Right. So in this case, basically the goal of Nuzzle is to make it so the attacker doesn't have the opportunity to execute their exploit. So what we're going to do is, with Nuzzle enabled, when the heap spray is attempted, in this case.
So we're going to start spraying just as before and see what happens.
And what we see here is that the spraying has been detected, nozzle has prevented the program from continuing to execute, in which case the heap is not in a state that the attacker can take advantage of it. And so, typically, if such an attack was detected, you'd want to exit your browser, essentially.
Excellent. Thanks for the demo. So if people want to know about nozzle, they can go to your nozzle website.
Exactly.
And they can read maybe a paper.
There's a paper about it that also.
There is no download available.
At this point, there is no download.
Excellent. Well, Ben, thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Have a good day.